We are back with the second hour of the Mark Johnson Show. I am David Goodman, sitting in for the vacationing Mark Johnson. In our second hour here, we're going to be talking to Spaceman Bill Lee, the legendary Red Sox pitcher. But first, we go to that other field of dreams, the one in Washington, where Bob Ney is going to tell us from Talk Radio News what's happening in our nation's capital. Good morning,
David,
Bob.
I like that field of dreams.
Well,
right now it's a field of a bunch of, I don't know, strikeouts.
So what's on the front burner today in Washington?
On the domestic front remains, of course, there's two Supreme Court cases. One was a labor case, which frankly really is very, very narrow about a person not having to join a union. And that it really is a narrow case. So even the unions aren't too upset. The Hobby Lobby case is huge because it really treats, first of all, a corporation as a person, that the owner of the corporation, Hobby Lobby, has a religious belief, and therefore the government cannot impose contraceptives and his company paying for it. And that's what the Supreme Court ruled. Doesn't mean that they can, you know, stop chemotherapy and other treatments on religious basis, because some people had thought that, but it does mean that companies like that, that have a perspective like that, can, in fact, just say, I'm not going to do the Obamacare provision on contraceptives. Now, you know, we don't know how many companies this will affect, et cetera, but that's been the, you know, explosion of the court against women is, you know, how it's billed. But I must say that the real big domestic issue beyond that, that's a Capitol Hill issue, the president came out swinging very hard on immigration yesterday, and he basically said that, you know, he's going to take action. The Republicans, mainly in the House, will not take action. And he's going to do it. And, of course, he's been criticized for, you know, executive authority and overreaching. Speaker of the House, Republicans sued him. So, but, you know, all these youth are coming into America like we've never seen before. And I think this is all going to, you know, come to a huge train crash up on Capitol Hill.
Is this, has there been any indication yet how the Congress is going to respond to him taking unilateral action or executive action on immigration?
Well, there's two things, and as a former member of Congress, I kind of know, you know, the players and what I think they'll do. And the two issues, one, the Speaker of the House will continue to say, every time the President does anything on immigration, John Boehner will continue to say he overstepped his authority, he's not following the law, because he's suing the President on that basis. So he's going to, whatever the President does, even if he's got the authority, Speaker Boehner will probably say he doesn't. The president is couching everything with the fact that even yesterday, he didn't say what he'll do, but his agencies are going to bring him some ideas, and within the Constitution framework, he'll act, is what he said. So he's a little sensitive to that lawsuit. And so that's the one idea of those two going back and forth. But the real problem is in the House, because Eric Cantor, the number two Republican leader, lost his election, as we all know. And it shook the Capitol up a lot on the Republican side. He, Eric Cantor, had talked about actually doing something on immigration. Now Republicans are scared, you know, very, very afraid to do anything on immigration. Yet if they don't do something, they're going to really hurt themselves with Hispanic base. Plus, we have all these tens of thousands of kids flowing into America. So I think the Republicans will do nothing right now after the elections in the Senate. Then they'll probably act due to the next presidential election and looking for Hispanic votes. I think they'll do nothing right now before the election.
What other hot issues then? I'm gathering when you say hot, this has got to be literally hot since it's going to be 90 in Vermont today.
That's right.
It's usually double that in Washington, right?
It is. It's a swamp. Well, literally, it was a swamp. The other issue, of course, continues to be Iraq. We have more people, military, going into Iraq on the ground. We're probably going to be up to 750-some people. We went a little bit more than we thought we would when it was previously announced. So that's always watched, because the Iraqi government is no better off than it was 2 weeks ago. It's sort of a powder keg over there with the militants and what's gone on there. The only other big news is that soccer finally has come to its own in America, and the United States is going against Belgium today. And a lot of people are going to watch that, at least for something positive, I hope.
Well, and that that could be a game. I watched the last game that Belgium played, and I would say, unlike some of the other teams, unlike Germany, which seemed very much out of really out of our reach, Belgium is a looks like a team we can play with.
I think so too. I'm with you.
Okay. Well, any other things we should know about here up in the hinterlands that are emanating from?
That's about the big news, and maybe Washington ought to start looking what the hinterland's saying. It might be better off.
We certainly think so.
I do too.
Okay, well, thanks very much,
thank
Bob May, from Talk Radio News.
Thank you.
All right, well, we're going to spend the rest of the hour with Bill Lee, the legendary Red Sox left-hander. We're just getting him on the line now. He's actually up in Canada, but we'll let him tell you what he's doing there. But for a little background, Bill Lee played for the Boston Red Sox from 69 to 78 and for the Montreal Expos from 79 to 82. And in 2008, he was inducted into the Red Sox Hall of Fame as the team's record holder for the most games pitched by a left-hander, 321, and the third highest win total, 94, by a Red Sox southpaw. You know, the way it's going for the Red Sox right now, I think they do well to put Bill Lee on the mound and have them help him out. So, Spaceman Bill Lee, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Where's Jasper?
Yeah, well, Jasper was indisposed this morning and couldn't make it into the studio, so I have to carry his water.
I deal with professionals. I don't deal with amateurs.
You are dealing with an amateur now, sir, so
I
hope you're bringing your B game.
Well, no, I've only got one game, and it's not a B game.
All right.
B games are played at 10 o'clock. This is 11 o'clock here.
Well, that should have given you plenty of time to, you know, shake off the cobwebs. And first of all, tell our audience where you're coming to us from.
I'm in Nova Scotia. I'm an hour ahead of you, so I can tell you what's going to happen in an hour. In other words, clairvoyant.
So we shouldn't get on that plane.
Get on that plane today. Not if you're heading east.
All right, what are you doing in Nova Scotia? Because when I last talked to you last week, you were in Craftsbury, which is a much more sensible place to be.
Well, it is. It is, unless the locals are going ramshot and stuff. And it can be a little bit like Deliverance up there in them hills. But it's basically most Vermonters are really nice, upstanding citizens. So I'm not going to go down that trail. But I'll tell you, it's Nova Scotia's nice. It's a lot of baseball players. They look you in the eye, and they don't have a lot else on their mind other than getting to the big league. So I like coaching here.
And what do you do? What kind of team is it that you're coaching?
It's the whole province. I go between towns. I go from Yarmouth to Bridgewater, Bridgewater to Halifax, Halifax to New Glasgow. Then I'll go into Ottawa. I don't do anything in Quebec anymore, but I'd like to. And then I'll do Ottawa. And in the future, I'll head west and do a little bit. I basically, fathers come to me when their sons have problems, and I straighten them out. That's basically what I do now. I'm a troubleshooter, and they should have me with the Red Sox working with Dupron. I think the new left-hander, Owens, you know, they moved him up to AAA, and I'm pretty sure they're going to bring him up to the big leagues pretty soon. Hopefully, they like to bring him up when they're out of it. They don't like to bring him up in the middle of a race. But Bogarts, they brought him up in the heat of the battle last year, and he did an outstanding job and got him to the World Series.
Well, before we switch to the Red Sox, because that's an endless list of problems that they need troubleshooting on, and it's also funny to hear you describe yourself as a troubleshooter, because I think in the past you were thought of more as a troublemaker.
Well, that's because they're not very bright. You know, they wouldn't know, like Zimmer wouldn't know a good pitcher if it walked up and bit him on the ass, you know.
All right, now Don Zimmer you're talking about, former Red Sox manager, baseball legend, just died. You and he had a famous falling out that resulted in you leaving the Red Sox. What happened? What was the problem with you and Don Zimmer?
Making it sound like I left the Red Sox was my doing. They got rid of me for Stan Pappy. They deported me to Canada. He benched me after he benched Ferguson Jenkins, after he benched Wise, after he got rid of Willoughby and Carbo. And he said we were a problem on the Red Sox. So he basically eviscerated all the old veterans and brought in Bob Sproul and a guy named Jim Wright. And you can look up their statistics and everything. In 1978, in the minute of a pennant race, we had a 14-game lead on the Yankees, and Zimmer took it upon himself that we can win it without Bill Lee. That was his words. And
why did he dislike you so much?
Carl Yastrzemski said, "Zim, I believe you're mistaken." And that's how it went.
So why did he dislike you?
He disliked me because I was player rep, I was an organizer, I was a guy that people went to for advice, and he was a baseball man, he was a gambler, he was a guy who did it his way and had it his way or the highway, and I was an integral part of that organization, being player rep for 9 years and 146 days since the day I arrived, and that's why him and Haywood kind of conspired, because it was a 78, they were looking forward to disrupting the union, and they basically sent me to Montreal. That's one of the reasons. I don't know. You'd have to ask him, and I don't think you're going to get a really good answer right now.
Yeah, he's a little hard to get a hold of, but I will say the eulogies make him out to be the patron saint of baseball. I just read Joe Torre's kind of ode to him in Sports Illustrated, and from that, it there's no hint of the kind of guy that you ran into, which sounds kind of like running into a buzzsaw.
Well, I would say that one-third of your ball club, actually one-half of your ball club are pitchers, and I don't think one of those old bits was from a pitcher. You know, and that's, if you talk to Tom Seaver, he will tell you a totally different story, and Tom Seaver is a Hall of Famer, too. And I'm in the Red Sox Hall of Fame, and I know for a fact what he did basically eviscerated that organization for a long time, and they got rid of him. He went to Chicago, where they didn't do well. They almost made the playoffs, I agree, but he reached for that brass ring too soon. He was with the San Diego Padres. Their pitching staff fell apart. He's a great baseball guy, don't get me wrong, but he's a poster child for the Peter principle in the fact that you rise to the level of your inability to work. And he got to that level. And he was outside of his league as a manager, I believe. And he should have just stayed. And he did. He became a bench coach and everything else. And, I got along with him. I worked hard with him. I did everything. But then he had the final say. I used to say that Dick Williams and Don Zimmer were very similar. They both had doghouses. And they would put you in the doghouse. The trouble is that Dick Williams' doghouse had a door on it. Zimmer's didn't.
So what got you so involved in politics? Because you've been holding forth.
Well, got Eugene Debs involved. If I have see a class of people lesser than I am them with them. If I see a man that's, of a criminal element, I am for him. If I see a man that's incarcerated longer than his time, I am also with him. And Eugene Debs was my patron saint growing up and the AFL-CIO, and I became a union organizer, and that's what I am. I'm an agitator. I'm a guy that says that these people should be making more than minimum wage. These people, that the pie is big enough to give the working class their due, and I've always worked for the immigrants in, Cesar Chavez. I've always been on that side of the ledger, and I always will.
How did being a devotee of Eugene Debs lead you into baseball?
It didn't. It was totally juxtapositioned because of the fact that my family are all right-wing conservatives. My grandfather was a bigot. He wrote letters to Truman to send the blacks, and he didn't use that word, back to Africa. He was my grandfather. I loved my grandfather, but politically he was totally on the wrong side of the spectrum. He was gassed in World War I, and he had a discharge. He came back. He had mental breakdowns. They put him on a farm, and his brothers were Clarence Hunt and Lloyd Hunt. Lloyd was the president of Southern California Edison, who built the Boulder Dam, and his Clarence was Hunt, Ball, Hart, and Brown, which was Edmund G. Brown and all the political people in the Democratic Party. So, you know, I come from a family of educators and politicians, and it's in my blood. But baseball was on my father's side, politics was on my mother's side.
So right now there's a lawsuit around the minor leagues. This guy Brocious is suing.
Scott Brocious?
Yeah.
The agent?
No, that's you're thinking
that's
of Boris.
Right.
This is Garrett Brocious is suing Major League Baseball about the conditions in the minor leagues where they're making less than minimum wage. And there's a bunch of amazing stats in this. 10% of minor leaguers make it to the majors. Minor league starting pay is $1,100 a month. And if you get to AAA, it doubles. And then major league salary increases since 76, it shows, were 2,500% increase. Minor league salary increases have gone up just 70%, while the consumer price index has gone up 300%. So you've seen all
slavery,
this.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, well, you've seen all this up close. What is the deal for minor leaguers? Is it
every boy would pay to be on a minor league team, and a lot of them do, and that's why they'll take less of a salary, because their goal is to make it to the big leagues and to make the big dollars. But you take a kid and say, hey, I'll give you a shot to make the major leagues, and I'm only going to give you this much. They'll jump at a lesser salary just for the chance to play baseball, because it's such a great game, and that's what it's all about. But you know, the factories are coming out of the Dominican Republic. They're coming out of, you know, Venezuela. Puerto Rico used to have a good program, but they became kind of affluent and lazy in some respects, and thereby their baseball program diminished. But you can see no ball players coming out of the inner city anymore. You know, you don't see that. And college basically does a great job of recruiting. And then right there where you're calling from, well, you're in Waterbury, right?
Yeah.
These people in Montpelier, these kids that are trying out for the Mountaineers, these people are undrafted free agents. These are people that would give their right kidney just to be in the big leagues. And they're trying. And then there's independent ball, which makes even less than A ball, double A, and these are guys that are hanging on, that have been sent down, that are giving it one more kick of the cat just for a sniff of the big league contract. And, you know, they're not going to get it. The only guy that's come out of the California leagues is Nava, Daniel Nava.
So right.
That's the league I play in.
You think it's harder now to break into the big leagues than when you got into the game?
Yeah, there's more people on the earth. That's a mathematical axiom that's exactly right. It's harder for a kid in the United States. They have elite programs. You got to pay big money. You got to get personal trainers. You got to get coaches. You look at these guys in these future leagues and stuff, it's all elite, and they specialize. And why do you think all these kids get sore arms? Because they're playing baseball way too much and not diversifying their muscle and motor skills by doing other things. And in the old days, we played basketball, we played baseball, we played football, you know, and we basically had better bodies, I think, less specialized bodies that they have now.
Well, we're talking on the Mark Johnson Show this morning with Bill Lee, the spaceman, the legendary Red Sox pitcher. I'm David Goodman sitting in for Mark Johnson. We've got a caller on the line. Dean's calling from Waitsfield. Dean, welcome to the Mark Johnson Show.
Well, howdy doody.
Good morning.
Hi. I have a couple of comments here. For one, you were my hero when you were pitching, for sure, and Don Zimmer was not. But I think the reason why Don Zimmer didn't like you is because you said he had the brains of a gerbil or something like that. Which, you know, I totally agreed with. You know, I hate to talk about the guy because he's dead, but I mean, that's why he didn't like you. But anyway, it's a great show, and you were a hero, and I guess you still are, so that's great.
Well, thank you very much.
And can I ask you a question? You don't have to answer this if you don't want, but how old are you?
I'm having a hard time here in Nova Scotia.
How old are you?
I am 68 in December
28th. Wow. You sound sharp as a tack.
Well, I'm still pitching. You know, I do my yoga. Joseph Pilates is one of my idols. And my wife is my other idol. She just, Joseph Pilates me in the back. So, yeah, I'm here in Nova Scotia teaching kids. Thank you for that. And you're right about Zimmer. You can't talk disparagingly about someone who has no chance to defend himself.
Well, he had his chance. Anyways, great show, and thank you very much. And you are a great person, Bill Lee.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a good one.
Well, Bill, speaking of still pitching, you did finally make it to Cooperstown, just not your body. Your bat and your uniform made it to Cooperstown.
Yeah, I got a bat in there, last RBI by an older gentleman in professional ball, and I have also... Now my goal is to hit a home run in A-ball, basically, before I die. I hit a few, you know, back in the 60s, but I'd sure like to hit one in 2013 or 14. Oh, it's 14 now, right?
It's 14 now.
I'm going to have to do it this year. But I almost hit one the other day in Bangor, Maine, off of an independent pitcher, a tall kid that used to pitch for against the Brockton Rocks. And I had two men on, two outs, and I end up walking on a 3-2 pitch, but I hit a ball off the right field wall. I just hooked it a little bit foul. If I had just a little bit more bottom hand, I would have had a home run at the age of 67.
So you skipped over the details of how parts of you got into Cooperstown. So in 2012, you pitched a 9-inning complete game for the San Rafael Pacifics.
Yes.
And your bat and uniform were donated to the Baseball Hall of Fame following the game. Since you had the record for being the oldest pitcher to make a starting appearance, pitch a complete game, and also to earn a win in professional baseball.
And a hit and an RBI.
And a hit and an RBI. Sorry to deprive you of that last...
That was it. We were down 3-0 when I got the base hit, started the rally that ignited us. We tied the ball game, and then we won it in the late innings by just beating the team from Maui. Guy named Cordoza, he used to pitch for the Angels. So, you know, these guys were real bona fide ball players, but both teams were good. My team was better because we were in first place, and they went on to win the pennant. So, you know, I just happened to pitch for good ball clubs in my career.
So, last year, you became the first guy to play all 9 positions in a professional ball game. Do I have that right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
So, you're 3 times as old as the guys you're playing with.
I know.
How's that work out? How can you hang with them?
It's Joseph Pilates, Advil, and mind over matter. Satchel Paige said it. It's mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter.
All right. Well, we have callers lining up here to get pearls of wisdom from the spaceman. So let's turn to Tom in East Montpelier. Tom, welcome to the Mark Johnson Show.
Hey there. How you doing?
Good.
Enjoying what Bill has to say. I just could have sworn I just heard him liken being a conservative to being a racist, like they're one and the same, and just wanted to get his take on that. If that's true, that's obviously a pretty outrageous statement.
Really? Well, I think conservatives are misled because they interfere with the environment. They frack. They do a lot of drill baby drill. They tend to be tight-fisted. I consider Republicans people with short arms, tight fists that can't get to their pockets. And as far as the racist term, that was about my grandfather. That was a specific statement that he was a racist. And my grandmother on my dad's side, she died at 99. She was a racist. And they were conservatives. And so you only can say what you see as you grow up. And that's what I saw.
Fair enough. Conservatives were the Republicans were the original abolition Party, as I'm sure you know, so I just think that's unfair.
Yeah, they did it in default. The true abolitionists were basically the Quakers and the people of New England that were really the people that pushed the envelope, the people from Concord, Massachusetts, and, you know, Thoreau and Emerson and those guys. But that was after the fact. Actually, Emerson was after the fact. But you're right. It was, hey, I lived in the South. I married girls from the South. David Brooks still had slaves that, you know, had bathrooms, separate bathrooms in their house down in Mississippi, and this was in 1969. So, and he was a nice guy, you know, he just, people in the South were born that way and raised that way, and, you know, it's tough, but you think of Jack Johnson, Unforgivable Blackness, you know, and the guy who basically deported him out of the United States was Kennesaw Mountain Landis. Go figure.
Right. Being a conservative in the South is a lot different than being a Republican, a Vermont Republican in the George Aiken mold.
Well, you're a shrinking,
yeah,
Republicans and other oxymorons, you know? If it wasn't
certainly
for the Progressive Party, you know, Douglas probably would not have got elected because the vote, because I think if it was only Democrats, no progressives, the progressives and the Democrats sided with one another, there'd never be another Republican elected in the state of Vermont. That's politics.
All right. Well, let's, we got Rick in Middlesex who's also wants to take a run at you. So, Rick, welcome to the Mark Johnson Show. You're talking to Bill Lee.
Hey, Bill. I just got to tell you, I remember number 337 in Fairbanks, Alaska, at a midnight classic, making
there
young kids look silly, and the 337 was Lee spelled backwards.
Upside down and backwards, you're right.
Upside down and backwards.
Wow, that was I was 61 years old when I pitched that ball game.
That's right. They really, I mean, it was amazing to see the game at, you know, without lights, but to see you there, being from Vermont. Me and my wife were just thrilled to watch you pitch, and you're amazing. You're just amazing.
Well, thank you. That was one of the great days of my life because I was with my Aunt Annabelle, who is in the Hall of Fame. Her persona's in the Hall of Fame. You know, she's one of the original women to throw a perfect game and a no-hitter, and she happened to see that ball game, and we sat on the banks of the Chena River at 4 in the morning smoking cigars, and that was pretty nice.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. Stay well.
Thank you.
All right, so, Billy, now we have to solve the problem of the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough when you're spending $160-something million dollars and you're in the toilet. And
well, you got $40 million to spend to catch up to the other contenders and stuff. And I believe Toronto's injured. They could fall back. No one's running away with it in the American League East. I believe there will be no wild card out of the American League East, so they're going to have to be winner take all, and it's got to be the Red Sox. And they just got to, I'll tell you, Victorino being hurt has really kind of disrupted the energy that they had. Victorino playing the way he did last year was tremendous. Johnny Gomes had a banner year. He's having a tough year, you know, they don't have to pitch to Ortiz. Now, why let Ortiz beat you if you don't have to, because there's really no one behind him? And it's tough to be David Ortiz this year. He said some disparaging things about the, you know, complaining about base hits and stuff, which rings of Boggs and Clements era, which really upset me. But, you know, they're a great organization, and you love Pedroia. You know, you love Holt. He'll play anywhere. You know, their backup catcher's having a terrible year. Their relationship between their starting catcher and their pitchers seems to be in limbo. I don't know what that's all about. So they have a lot of issues that they have to deal with, but it's not July 4th yet. If they're 4.5 out or 4 out on July 4th, I still won't give up on them. And, rebuild. I'm not in a rebuilding mode right now. I'm just tweaking a little bit here and there. You have Mookie Betts. You have a lot of great talent in AA and AAA that you can go to. It's just that you don't want to put a lot of pressure on these kids early.
So, but in the big scheme of things, and you have the view from the inside of how this goes, how do you go from a team that, you know, 7-8 months ago was on top of the world with every cylinder firing, all nine guys in the lineup could hit for power, to a team that is now not just doing poorly, but is last in the major leagues for scoring runs, and every one of these guys who had banner years last year, from Pedroia to Bogarts to, right on down the line, it's now the whole thing's flipped on its head. How does that happen?
That's baseball. Pedroia did it without a thumb last year. Pedroia was, he must have had tremendous amount of pain pills and shots and stuff to play without a ligament in his thumb, on his right thumb, after breaking it on opening day. You look at what they did last year, it was a miracle. It was a miracle season to go from worst to first. And it is also amazing for them to slip back into no run production. They swing it too many balls high out of the strike zone, especially off of left-handed pitching. I watched them select, the guy from the Yankees beat them, and all they had to do was lay off the high fastball, and they probably would have won that game or at least scored a little bit more. They got beat 4-0, I think. And I look at guys, their manager. They go to Oakland. You got first base open. He ends up going out to the mound. They pitch to the guy who was our starting center fielder, and he beats you twice in 2 days with walk-off hits. You just don't let that happen. And Lester, when he pitched against the Yankees the first time back with Ellsbury, he has him 0-2, throws him a cookie out over the plate, and he knocks it off the right center field wall for an inside-the-park home run. You just don't do that. What happens when you win is you get fat. They call it the chicken circuit. You go out there, and it makes it hard to repeat, and that's the problem that I see with the Red Sox.
So you're saying the manager, you're saying John Farrell, that you're putting...
Well, he's a great coach. He's a great guy. He's Dudley Do-Right of the Mound. He's got a big chin. He looks like he rides a horse, and he's got a girlfriend named Nell. You know, it just reminds me, when he goes out to the mound, he comes out of the dugout, he looks like Punxsutawney Phil, you know? He looks around to the left and right and makes sure there's no sniper from Vermont ready to shoot him out of his burrow, you know?
If by some act of God or somebody slips something into Larry Lucchino's drink and all of a sudden we see the guy coming out in the manager's outfit is you, how are you turning that team around?
Well, I wouldn't be the guy. I mean, I'm too energetic. I'm too emotional. I'm too, it would be like bringing Billy Martin in. You know, anyone with the name Billy is going to be a fiery guy. And maybe they need a fire under them, but my theory is you got to light that fire yourself. I'm not the guy with the matches. I'm the guy that's going to build it so that you can light that fire yourself. You know, I believe in two words in my life, comprehensive propensities. And you guys out there got to look that up.
Comprehensive propensities.
That's it.
Well, I'll leave it to a caller to offer their version of what that means. But we're talking to Bill Lee, the spaceman here on the Mark Johnson Show. I'm David Goodman, sitting in for a vacationing Mark. You can join the conversation at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Are you going to give us any hint, Bill, what comprehensive propensities means?
Yeah, I will
means?
Give you one hint. It's a man. He built the geodesic dome. His name was R. Buckminster Fuller. That's one hint. That's a big one.
Okay. Well, if any callers have insight into what comprehensive propensities are, this is your chance to run it by Bill Lee. So you would be, you're saying, as far as why wouldn't you blow up this Red Sox team and start over? Why is this chicken?
Won last year.
Yeah, but this chicken syndrome you're talking about, where they get too fat and they can't repeat. How do you get through that?
I don't think they have that. I think that happened with us in 75 for sure, but it didn't happen with them. I think that they have you have Pedroia as your conscience. He is Jiminy Cricket on that team, and no one's going to cross him. No one's going to get to the ballpark earlier than him. He sets a precedent that no one set there and stuff. So I don't see them as lackadaisical. I don't see them as not trying. I see them as trying too hard and pressing, where last year someone would always come up and Karp would hit a three-run homer against Tampa Bay, pitch hit. They had guys, everybody chipped in, everybody, you know, that's what makes for a season. And I said at the beginning of this season, I don't care what they do, they have carte blanche this whole year. I'm taking this year off. And what happens is all you rest of you fans are watching them going and wanting them to repeat, and I've already said I don't care what they do. I had so much fun last year that I'm taking this year off, and I'm going to do something else.
Which means we should really be talking about baseball in Montreal. So you finished your career playing for the Montreal Expos, and lo and behold, the first game since your era is played in Montreal again this year, an exhibition game. Does baseball have a future in Montreal?
I don't know. It was Toronto and the Mets, so it didn't mean anything to me. I hate both of them. It was funny. It was like you honored the 1994 team. You brought up Dennis Martinez, Larry Walker, all the guys that brought baseball to the pinnacle of Montreal history. And then the year that the strike was, and they didn't play the World Series because of Bud Selig and the owners. And now you're honoring that team. It's basically like the Montreal fans were up there yelling, screaming, drinking, and hitting themselves on the thumb with a hammer. You know, that's what it reminded me of. And Jonah Carey, I don't know, he wrote a book called Up, Up, and Away. Warren Cromartie's doing his best to try and get baseball back there. And what it is there'll be baseball in Montreal because Canada is going to control America. Canada has 37 million people. They have all the fresh air. They have all the fresh water. They have all the minerals. And they're the breadbasket, except there's a big flood in Manitoba today, so maybe pea prices are going to go up. But I see Canada, because think of the Bruins. The Boston Bruins, they play in Toronto or TD Bank North building. In other words, the Toronto Bank owns the Boston Garden. Go figure.
So you don't think it's realistic that we're going to see a team come back to Montreal?
I think you will. I think you will. I don't know when, but it may not be. I think it will. I think they'll have a build. I think Canada, you know, they're lowering their dollar again, 93, so they can sell more stuff to the United States. So you watch. If you watch the economic reports, it's there's a lot of stuff coming down from Canada that we're buying. And I think They're smart. They have their banks never went under in 2008, 2009. They were strong. They went out and bought. They're very secure. They're very conservative because of the fact that there's that good word conservative again. They're smart because they're so secure up here because everybody walks down the street and they know if they fall down that everybody here is going to help pick them up. There's tremendous stories of people helping one another in Canada, and it's because they're so secure because of their socialistic knit system that we don't have in the United States.
Well, isn't Vermont the closest thing to Canada as the U.S. has?
It is. Vermonters have low, I'm telling you, Vermonters are hardworking. They have low unemployment. They are multitasking. They're very diversified. They do many things well, and you're right. And why don't we just become part of Canada, and then we don't have to worry about it?
There you go. Well, so one of the times
it's Canada Day too, you know, everybody's wearing red and white down here. It's Canada Day. All the whole damn town is closed. There's a big parade. Gonna go by our thing right after your show. We're gonna go to a parade. And my wife's Canadian, and we're going to rave the red and white.
Well, how about that? Happy Canada Day. What does Canada Day mark?
It's their July 4th. It's 4th of July in Canada. It would be our equivalent to 4th of July. There's going to be tremendous light show in the sky around here tonight.
So what happened on July 1st that made Canada Canada?
It was Confederation Day. It's when they all confederated and they formed Canada, basically. It was a confederation of states, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. They all came together in Charlottetown, PEI, and they formed a country. And that's why it's Canada Day.
Well, we had a confederacy, too, but that didn't work out so well.
No. That was the war of, what do they call it? The South calls it the unfortunate... The unpleasantness. That's what
the unpleasantness. Well, that's one way to refer to a few hundred thousand people dead.
And they were all brothers. You know, it was here we were fighting amongst ourselves, and it wasn't over slavery. It was over states' rights. People don't realize that, and the slavery thing and the Emancipation Proclamation came about to try and destabilize the South. It was. And it worked, you know. We turned them back, luckily, at Gettysburg, all because of a guy named Chamberlain who fought a beautiful maneuver on Little Round Top and saved the Union.
Okay, well, we're talking to Bill Lee here on the Mark Johnson Show. I'm David Goodman sitting in for Mark, and we've got a caller, Steve from Williamstown. Steve, welcome to the Mark Johnson Show.
Hey, appreciate it. Hey, I just want to say one thing. I've been a Red Sox fan since 66 and haven't watched Bill at Boston. I think he's a great pitcher. What's your take, Bill, on this season? Obviously, I've heard quite a few different comments. My take, and it's strictly my take, is I don't think we've got a real captain this year that or camaraderie between the players. Like, we had the Beers last year. The Beers were hitting good. They all hit good. They had I think Salty leaving was a big downfall for them, along with Osberry. But what's your take? How do you think we can get back to maybe the Beards or whatever it may take to get them to come around? And I'll let you have it. Thank you very much.
It was a magical season. And you're right, Saltamacchia had a tremendous season. He's a switch hitter. I thought you could throw the fastball by him up all day long, and I think they're doing that in the National League now. You know, and he had value. They did want to re-sign him. I think they basically thought they could stand pat and, you know, do really well. And all the other teams spent a lot more money than we did in the offseason. Toronto did tremendous. Baltimore did tremendous. New York went out and got Tanaka. Without Tanaka, just think where that team would be, the New York Yankees. They would be way below us, you know, and then we'd only have to deal with Baltimore and Toronto. So as far as captains and leadership, they led by committee last year. Pedroia was hurt, and everybody, I thought, if Pedroia could go out and play hurt, they all played hurt. They all played tough. And it was a magical season. So what is it going to take? What it's going to take is to, they're a good team. They just have to play well in September. I believe if they come by and play good in August and September and they get the call-ups and they get these kids that can come up and fill in, like we had a guy in 1974. We had two guys in 74 that got called up on September 1st, and we were tied with Baltimore. And their names were Freddie Lynn and Jim Rice. And they did not use them in 74. They didn't play until halfway through September. And halfway through September, they played the last 15 games when we were out of it, and they both hit 400. If they had brought them up and played them on September 1st, in 74, we could have been world champions. 75, we could have been world champions. 76, Ferguson Jenkins doesn't tear his Achilles tendon, and I don't go down in the brawl in Yankee Stadium. We could have been world champions. In 1972, we lost by a half a game to Detroit, and Detroit went on to play, you know, and got beat by Oakland, but we could have been there. In 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, we were a very good ball club. We had great depth, and we used our players well, and that's the key. Farrell's got to get everybody in there. He's got to do it. Keep them healthy, and hopefully we'll make our move in August and September. Hopefully we'll start in July, but, you know, we'll see.
You think that the pitchers who they've got now, with Buchholz being so wobbly, that they can do it with this crew of pitchers?
No. They need one pudgy little left-hander that can throw soft away, turn the ball over, and if they can get a little pudgy left-hander that has pinpoint control like Jamie Moyer or the guy from Toronto, the guy that he's actually had a rough... It's guys that have to pitch away. You got to force right-handers to hit the ball the other way at Fenway Park. If you start hanging breaking balls, if you're a right-hander and throw breaking balls and hang them, you're going to lose. If you're a left-hander that's a power pitcher and you make mistakes, you're going to lose. And, you know, Lester must have pitched a miraculous game against Tanaka the other day. I didn't see that. I would have loved to have seen that game and saw how it went. But the funny thing is, when I pay attention to Lester, he loses. When I don't pay attention to Lester, he wins. So my key is, don't watch him.
There you go. All right, well, we're going to take a break and come back right after that. We're talking to Bill Lee here on the Mark Johnson Show. I'm David Goodman sitting in.
WDEV is your home for Boston Red Sox baseball all season long. Coverage is brought to you in part by Meckelson's RV, Route 2 in East Montpelier. Mid-State Dodge and Hyundai on the Ferry Montpelier Road.
Stop behind second by Pedroia, gets up, throws, and got him at first base. What a play by Petey.
Ferry Electric on Route 302 in Barrie. Green Insurance in Waterbury and Stowe Insurance in Stowe. By Alan Jones and Sons on Air Street in Barrie.
And he swings and drives one deep to right. This one is long gone. Three-run homer. The Red Sox lead it 4-1.
By Gifford Medical Center in Randolph. Your home for Boston Red Sox baseball is WDEV, FM, and AM.
Hometown service from a family-run company, that's what you'll get when you go with the folks at Jamison Insurance. Jamison Insurance has three locations. Their main office is in Waitsfield, also offices in Richmond and in Waterbury. You may not need insurance today, but that day may come. And when it does, we'd encourage you to call the folks at Jamison Insurance. Their main number in Waitsfield, 496-2080. That's 496-2080. You'll also find them on the web at jamisoninsurance.com. If you own a business, John Jamison, who owns Jamison Insurance, will be happy to come to your place of business and do a review. He'll write your report, see if he can save you some money. Also, if you're an individual, you're welcome to call them at their main offices, and they'll do a review of your auto or homeowner's policy right there on the phone. Jamison Insurance, 496-2080, and you'll find them online at jamisoninsurance.com.
This is auto craftsman Amy, author of the book, How to Buy a Great Used Car. I have three ways to help you find a quality used car that will last for many years of Vermont driving. Stop in at Auto Craftsman in Montpelier, and I'll give you a free copy of my book. It has all the information you need to make a smart, informed decision. If you find a used car from a private owner or dealer you think you might want to buy, call Auto Craftsman to make an appointment for a pre-buy inspection. Find out if it's a good vehicle or a lemon before you buy it. Once you own your new car, bring it to Auto Craftsman to get our corrosion-free undercoating so it doesn't rust away before it's time. For more information, call Auto Craftsman at 223-2253 or go to our website at autocraftsman.com.
Do you want to study liberal arts programs such as ecology, outdoor education, environmental humanities, or sustainable agriculture? Do you want to study at a small college that thinks the most rewarding learning is hands-on learning? You want Sterling College. Sterling is a liberal arts college in Cranberry Common, Vermont, where you can get a degree in ecology, outdoor education, environmental humanities, sustainable agriculture, or you can design your own major. We offer classes in laboratories, seminar rooms, on the side of a mountain, or in a barn or a pasture. If your values lead you to commit to becoming an environmental steward, and you want to work with both your hands and your mind, then Sterling College is the right place for you. Sterling College, a liberal arts college in Cranberry Common, Vermont. Visit www.sterlingcollege.edu.
We're back for the last few minutes. I'm David Goodman sitting in for Mark Johnson, and we're talking to Bill Lee, the spaceman, former Red Sox pitcher and raconteur. Bill, last time I saw you was up at your place in Craftsbury, and you were giving Jasper and I a tour of your baseball bat-making operation. What's up with your bats?
They're in the trunk of my car. I got 60 of them up here, and all the kids are learning them. The amazing thing is the Little League bat I designed, you know, and is finally coming to fruition, finally got them in the hands of a Little League down in Massachusetts that went all wood, and they were using these cheap Louisville sluggers and light bats, and the kids were swinging, and they were having a terrible time. They weren't making the adjustment. And this one team, I sent them 12 bats, and their batting average, every guy on the team doubled his batting average.
Wow.
And the coach goes, how can that be? What is it? And I said one word, physics. And I've been designing this, and no one listens to me except Chili Davis of the Oakland team, and look how many runs they're putting up. And I'm telling you, Chili saw what I did down in, it was about 5 years ago when he was the hitting coach at Pawtucket. And, you know, I gave that bat, I designed one specifically for the little Cuban kid that was our shortstop with the great hands, and Iglesias.
Yeah.
And then, next thing you know, I don't think what happened was I got a feeling that he didn't pay someone the right amount of money, and I think someone broke his shins with that bat.
That's what I'm thinking. There's a direct connection between his busted-up feet and your bats.
My busted-up beats his fats, and the fact that, remember Cepedis? Cepedis, he was rotting in a motel room in Cancun, Mexico, and he basically got out of there. They were going to cut off some of his fingers, you know. And the mob had a hold of him and stuff. And look at Oakland. There's a weird connection. I think there's a great baseball crime novel involved. And I think Lee Childs, the guy who does Jack Reacher novels, ought to write it.
All right. So you've mentioned things on your to-do list are hitting a home run. You've already gotten your uniform into Cooperstown. The rest of your body's trying to catch up. What else is on Bill Lee's to-do list?
Get Little League bats in everybody's hand. Get Little League baseball to go all wood. Get rid of the designated hitter. I want the game to be played the way it used to be played. I want to get rid of all double taps in the infield, which I consider an anal retentive disease. A lot of guys have it. The left-handed pitcher, the one from Venezuela, our guy, he double taps terribly. It's a disease of anal retention, I call it, where guys pull the ball out of their glove and then they go back to their glove again. And I think that's a wasted movement, and that's one of my pet peeves. I've got to get rid of that in baseball.
And on your own personal list, you played all nine positions last year for pro team. What else is left for you to do? We got to make it quick because we're out of time.
I know. I have no goals other than to be a steward of the country to try and promote, you know, I would consider it an agenda that tread lightly on the planet Earth. Whenever I sign my autograph, I go, Bill Lee, Earth. I go person, place, and time, and that's how I end everything.
All right. Thank you, Bill Lee, from coming to us from space. Happy Canada Day.
Much.
And that'll do it for the Mark Johnson Show, and I'm David Goodman signing off for this week.
Locally owned and operated, 96.1 WDEV, FM and Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, and AM 550 WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier.
A report of problems linked to the health care system. Almost 3 million people who signed up for health care on the government's insurance exchange have what are being called inconsistencies in their information, according to a new government watchdog report. Less than 1%